Chapter 32. The Gate, Its Guardian Eternal. The long processional that led to the gate stretched for more than a kilometre. The custodians marched through this grand hall in silence, flanked on either side by a legion of banners and war standards commemorating the many regiments of terror and the Imperium. Amongst this sea of colour and veneration stood the proud symbols of mythic beasts of old Earth, the Griffin and Wyvern, the lion-headed manticore, the imperial eagle, rendered in silver, gold, and bronze, hung with gleaming medals or victory pennants, the banners stirred the heart and humbled false pride. Here was a legacy of war and conquest, of unity. Helots moved solemnly amongst the banners, swinging censers that trailed smoke. Strange winged servitor creatures flew languidly overhead, the tolling of their metal bells a doleful echo in the vast vaulted chamber. And at the end of this promenade of old glories stood the Eternity Gate, a soaring edifice over 620 meters high. Its gilded face depicted the Emperor plunging his spear into the denizens of old night. A blazing sun framed the master of mankind's countenance, a galactic tapestry rendered in eye-aching detail in the background. Two great titans stood watch at either side of the gate, looming and belligerent, arrayed in the panoply of the Legio Ignatum of Mars. As Vulcan and his escort closed to within 10 meters, the gate began to part, and a thin figure, quite ordinary-looking but radiating power, stepped from the darkness beyond. He wore the robes common to any Terran bureaucrat, and leaned heavily on an eagle-topped staff. His eyes flashed beneath a hood which shrouded his face in shadows. Vulcan bowed deeply to the sigilite.
Lord Malkador.
Malkador dismissed the custodians, who returned the way they had come to stand sentinel with the imperial fists.
Your sons will join the wall guard and fight with honour, I am certain, uttered the sigilite.
And is that all you saw when you looked into my mind, my lord? Asked Vulcan.
Malkador did not answer, though Vulcan could tell he had seen something of the horror the Primarch had witnessed on the other side of the Imperial dungeon.
Come, Vulcan,
he said instead, and passed back through the gate. Once they were both through, it shut behind them. Past the darkness that lurked beyond the gate, Vulcan met the army he had seen retreating back to the palace. Few remained from the number he had witnessed, and those who did looked battered and beyond weary. Yet their ranks made ready, facing the shimmering portal, now sealed, that had led to the place beyond.
I saw it, he said to Malkador. I saw what they faced.
It is hell,
said Malkador without breaking step.
Hell given form. And it seeks to undo all of this and enslave mankind to its will.
And sat before the portal was his father, the Emperor, upon the golden throne of terror. Vulcan felt the urge to bow before his glory. So achingly pure and bright was the refulgence of the figure upon the throne. He reached for the talisman around his neck and experienced a momentary spike of revelation. The Emperor's voice resounded like a pealing bell or clarion horn, a host of triumphal flutes, or the beating of 1,000 war drums. It was all of it, and none of it, and Vulcan staggered as he heard it.
My son.
Vulcan wept and sank to his knees, head bowed in supplication.
Father.
Though the words resonated in Vulcan's head, the Emperor's lips did not move. He remained still, hands clenched around the arms of the throne, feet set firmly, his expression one of dire and abject concentration. Vulcan realized he held the portal shut. By his will alone were the demons kept at bay.
I have returned, Father, as you willed it.
Then rise, Vulcan, and do what it is I brought you back from death to do.
Vulcan did as bidden, though with difficulty. The mere presence of his enthroned father gnawed at his resolve. An immense weight resisted him, and he fought to overcome it. He heard the sigilite's voice, distant but urgent, as Vulcan gained the first step that led to the throne's dais. Through blazing light and the burning intensity of the Emperor's unfettered glory, he thought he saw his father blink. A momentary gesture, near imperceptible, silenced Malkador's protests. Vulcan would never know what passed between them, but he recognized its toll upon the Emperor, who grimaced with the immense effort. Every step brought greater pain, both physical and mental, as Vulcan relived every one of his many deaths. A lightning storm of endings flashed before him, each thunderous crack a blow that drew a wince of barely suppressed agony from the Lord of Drakes. And still he rose, another step, and then another. Close now, he saw the strain upon his father's face, and realized what it had cost to hold the way open for him and his sons, though they had been unable to take it, and had instead come via a different road, one that led to the Earth itself. And at last, with the Talisman of Seven Hammers in his hand and the throne within his reach, did Vulcan see.
And the horror of it.
What his father had used him to create, the entire purpose for his resurrection, came crashing in. He shut his eyes, the light burning, and when he opened them again, he was no longer on Terra. He had returned to Nocturne. A man faced him. Slighter of frame and wearing a strange garb that put Vulcan in mind of a Grecian myrmidon of old Earth. A long tan cloak swept across his right shoulder, pinned at his breast with a circular bronze stud. Around his waist was a thick belt of Tarouges, and he wore a gold breastplate sculpted to resemble a man's naked musculature. He had no helm, instead preferring a silver circlet. His dark hair flowed like a mane of jet. Torques ringed his arms, and he wore vambraces and shin guards in the same style as his breastplate.
"You are the Outlander," said Vulcan,
his own attire and armour that of a Nocturnian tribesman.
"This is how we met, my son. Do you remember it?"
asked the Outlander. Vulcan frowned.
"Why have you done this, father? I have fashioned something abominable."
The Outlander's gaze flicked to the talisman around his son's neck, and then back to Vulcan.
"Do you recall what I said to you as we sat here and looked out upon these very sands?"
The great expanse of the Pyre Desert stretched out before them, harsh and unforgiving, but beautiful in its way. Vulcan did not answer, and he did not meet his father's eye. Heat haze made the desert tremble, even with the sun setting and painting the sand a fiery red.
"I said your destiny was a great one," the Outlander went on. "And I said
that you needed me more than I knew, more than perhaps I would ever know."
Vulcan shook his head, a grimace of denial set upon his face.
"But this, how can I do this?"
"You are the Earth, my son. Its fire and solidity. That is how."
"And the great flame that it will unleash if the throne falls, if you fail."
Vulcan felt a firm hand upon his shoulder and heard the darkening of his father's mood in his words.
"It will consume the palace and all of Terra. The throne world will burn."
A sharp turn brought Vulcan eye to eye with the Outlander. Incredulity warred with duty on his face.
"To deny it to my brother?"
"No, my son," said the Emperor sadly, the master of mankind standing before him now. "Not to deny it to Horus, but to Chaos. And to strike a blow against their forces the like of which they will never recover from."
"To win the war, you would sacrifice Terra."
"If Terra falls and Horus takes it, then we have lost anyway, and all of mankind will suffer."
Vulcan looked down at the talisman in his hand and fought the urge to crush it, though he knew it would not yield to even his strength.
"I am sorry, my son," said the Emperor. "I needed to hide it from you, what you had created, and what would be wrought by it in my name."
"Has it always been within me? the capacity to fashion such a thing.
Tell me, my son, why did you destroy your great works and send the others where no one might ever find them?
I feared they would be put to ill use, and what they could unleash.
Which is why it had to be you. It has ever been within you, Vulcan, and I hoped such a day would not come to pass that I had need of it. I hoped for a great many things, he said sadly. Your death, your true death and resurrection, brought forth what you needed to fashion the talisman. All of your pain, the suffering of your legion, it has led us to this point.
Vulcan met his father's gaze, defiant.
And if I refuse?
You will not refuse, for you still believe in hope that I will prevail, that Horus will be stopped and the war will end. But you are also pragmatic and know that this must be done in case hope fails us in the end.
And as before, the light grew around the Emperor, radiating from his skin, and Vulcan shut his eyes lest he was struck blind. Upon opening them, he was once more before the throne, his father's unswerving gaze upon him, willing him, urging him. Vulcan wrenched the talisman from his neck and reached out with it towards the throne. A small circular aperture presented itself, and without further hesitation he pressed the talisman into it. In the moment of connection, Vulcan saw a sea of flame rise up to engulf the Tower of Hegemon, to swallow the Tower of Heroes and all the mighty spires of the palace. It spread, this conflagration within his mind, sweeping across the Pan-Pacific, Ursh, High Brazil, Ind and Nordafrik, to every region until nothing remained but ash. The talisman would magnify the power of the throne to unleash cataclysm. Vulcan blinked, and it was gone. A part of the great mechanism, impossible to remove and forever waiting. Staggering back down the steps, his immortal flesh re-knit itself, his body regaining its vitality, until by the time he reached the bottom, he was without injury. Vulcan retreated from his father and the throne. His eyes went to the portal. It would fail. His father had seen it, and Vulcan knew what lay beyond. He stepped back until he stood in the shadow of the Eternity Gate, and held Erdrakul across his body in both hands, an eternal guardian.
Let them come.